Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Living with Dying. And today I'm delighted to be joined by illustrator Katie Clemenson, who's written a wonderful book, a beautiful book called Beyond. But as with so many other people on my podcast and so many other interviews that I've done, it all began with a tragedy, didn't it, Katie?
It did, yes. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It began back in 2019. We had our firstborn daughter. And unfortunately, she was stillborn at 41 weeks, which was a huge shock and completely unexpected. There was no warning. And it just turned our lives upside down overnight. But yeah, she was baby Wren. Yes, and she was our first daughter. We've gone on to have two daughters since, who are now 3 and 5.
What a shock, then. So did you have a perfectly normal pregnancy up until that point?
Yeah, I had a dream pregnancy, to be honest. Felt fantastic. All of the charts were perfect, everything. Just such a lovely pregnancy. And it was just all the more shocking. She was £8.14. She was a big baby. And yeah, we just, don't really know what happened. Unfortunately, it's unexplained. And I had good consultant care in the pregnancies afterwards, but it was frightening. And I think the lack of any warning was one of the hardest things for us to deal with.
Can you tell me at what point you realised that she wasn't alive?
So I was in labour and we went into the hospital and they scanned me and they said there's no heartbeat. And she had moved that morning. I'd felt her moving around. And then when we got there, yeah, they said she'd gone. It's hard to explain what it's like to be in that tiny hospital room, very heavily pregnant, and not knowing what's going to happen next, really. It's quite a shattering experience. My husband was with me, and we just... Yeah, we were completely lost in that moment. It was like the floor disappeared. The sky fell in. It was that kind of feeling. We had great care. We were taken to a bereavement suite. We were at the RD&E in Exeter. We were taken to a bereavement suite and we were handed over to the bereavement midwives. And then we were in the hospital for 3 days. I didn't give birth to her until the next day. I had a natural labour with her, so I still had to go through full labour. And it was a very strange thing because when she was born and we saw her for the first time, the minute you see your child for the first time is one of the most amazing experiences you can have in a life, I think. And it wasn't any different that she died in a way, because we still saw her little face and that she looked like us and her beautiful hair. And she was just this perfect, full-size, beautiful baby. And I remember the minute we saw her, we still felt joy to meet her. And it was as though all the lights came back on and the colour came back in the room, actually getting to hold her. Yeah, because they have cold cots and things in the hospital, it means you can take some time. We were lucky we had some time to spend with her and process a bit what had happened and be able to say goodbye in that way there before we had to leave her, which was the hardest moment of my life, without doubt. And then, yes, we came home. And then the next journey began, really, of the grief. But yeah, it's an experience that is sort of branded into your life and will never, you change afterwards and you're never that person before.
You say you got to spend 3 days, was it, with her?
Yes.
That must have been surreal somehow.
It was, and I found... It's so strange how the maternal instinct works, because I kept wanting to wrap her in blankets. I kept wanting to bundle her up like you do with newborns. And, you know, that it was quite hard, I think, yeah, for your maternal instinct to understand what had happened. And I think what was something I'd like to talk about that time was that the bereavement midwives were incredible in that they talked about Ren to us, and they'd comment on her hair or the fact she had quite big feet. I think she would have been quite tall. You know, they'd sort of talk about her and the way they would hold her. They dressed her for me when she was born. And actually, the clothes were too small, so we had to get the next size up. So I had a few bigger things in my bag. And they just had this dialogue with us, and they took photos, and they helped us, you know, to do little casts of our hands and feet. All these things are so precious now. But the way they just treated her like the precious daughter she was, I can't really get that over enough. But, and I also feel like we didn't really know what to do in those first few hours after we lost her. And they just really helped us to get through that part. And I think we also felt very lucky there was a charity called Sam's Charity who paid to set up the bereavement suite at the hospital, the fact we had a memory box to take home, all those things that really helped us begin grief, and that we weren't alongside mothers holding newborns, all those things that made this experience more tolerable. A lot of it comes back to Sam's Charity. So I do some work with them now, and I've raised some money for them. And it's made me reflect on mothers in the past who didn't have that support, and how incredibly difficult it is anyway. But without that, it's almost unbearable to think of. So, yeah, the hospital treated us really well.
It does sound like you were lucky. I don't suppose that's available everywhere yet, no, is it?
And I don't think it is, sadly.
I've often thought how ghastly it must be having to drive home with the car seat that you had to take to the hospital.
Yes, I will struggle a bit with seeing people with car seats. It's a funny thing, isn't it? It's in your mind. But I think also we were so, because I was 41 weeks, I was late, you know, everyone was dropping gifts off. There was so much in the house. I hadn't decorated a nursery. I was a bit superstitious of that. But we did have a pram, you know, we had all this baby stuff. And you just come home and you think, what do we do with it all? And I was grateful my husband just knew what to do. And he just said, we're going to pack it all up and we're going to put it all in the attic. We're just going to keep it. And I couldn't make the decision in that moment. I didn't know if I'd want another baby. I didn't know if I could do it again. But he knew. He was like, no, we're going to pack it all away. So it was really, it was sad, really sad to put it all away. And it was also such mixed emotions when we then did bring it back down again for our next daughter. And, you know, the pram's been used for two further children, and some of those links I really like between my three girls, you know, special.
So you are a mother of three.
Yes, yes, yeah. And that's another tricky one when strangers ask you that question. I think any bereaved parent knows how tricky that is. And I think I judge it on how well I know the person sometimes. But my husband often says, I've got two daughters, but it's complicated. He doesn't. So he's kind of saying there's something else, but he doesn't necessarily want to talk about Ren in that moment. But yeah, I mean, other people's reactions is a whole other thing with grief, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. So I know that you say that you channeled your grief into your creativity, but I'm wondering how long that took, because presumably initially you didn't want to do anything.
Yes, it's an interesting one. So before I went on maternity leave, I had been working on a book, a new picture book. So I write and illustrate children's picture books, and I'd been doing a new one about a penguin, and it wasn't really coming together, and I was kind of happy to put it aside. It hadn't felt like it was working. And quite soon after we lost Ren, I'd say probably within a month, maybe a few weeks, the character started to appear again in my mind, but she'd become a mother. It was a female now, whereas it had been a male penguin previously. And suddenly it was this female penguin and this egg. And it just started to appear in little snippets, little moments of thinking of her and her chick. And then I think I sat down maybe about 6 weeks afterwards and just started drawing out this penguin who grows these wings and is grieving. And I was crying as I was drawing it. And I was thinking, I kind of know what I'm doing. I'm trying to process what's happened and I'm drawing something for Wren. And so I thought I would take these drawings and put them in her memory box and that would be it, really. I didn't think it would go any further than that. But the story wouldn't leave me alone. So the story kept coming back to me and kept building. And so within, I don't know, probably a year, I had a full story. And I wasn't sure then, do I want this to be something, you know? And so I decided to show it to my editor. So I work with Penguin Random House. And I thought I'd just show her, and I expected her to decline gently and that I might take it to a smaller publisher or maybe it wouldn't be made. I wasn't really sure. It didn't feel like any of my other books. I'd always approached my other books as, what would children want to read? What does, you know, this wasn't, this was purely for me and for Wren. So I showed it to her and she loved it. She is at Puffin Picture Books. And so it went on a long time. I mean, it's taken 5 years for the book to be finished because all the artwork, having two small children along the way, I've only been able to work on it on weekends and things. So it's been extraordinary, the whole experience of making it, particularly because I would have this one day of the week where I could go and sit down at my desk and think about Wren and bring up those emotions. And it felt like spending time with her, really, but try and get down and explain and explore all I'd felt and what I felt about her. And I think trying to write a personal story that's also broad enough for those who grieve to also relate to takes time. But I'm really proud of what we've created. And I've had so many messages from bereaved mums who've read it and loved it, have felt seen by it, or have gifted it to friends who've lost babies. Some have even given it to neighbours who lost, you know, a baby who are in their 60s now, you know, and have spent this life grieving the child they didn't know. So it's been quite amazing. There's not a commercial picture book about baby loss. There's not a commercial picture book about a bereaved mother. So it does feel like this was missing and I couldn't find it when I needed it. And so I'm just really hopeful that it continues to find those who need it. And it's also served a purpose in our family. When I was writing it, I knew that I might be able to use it with my daughters to explain about Wren. And I have done that. So I read it with my eldest daughter, Juno. And then it left a space for us to then be able to talk about a baby that couldn't stay. And then I talked to her about her sister, and it was an incredible moment. So the book serves another purpose as well. Sorry, I let you get a word in edgeways.
No, it's lovely to hear you talking about it because it obviously meant a huge amount to you. And I'm fascinated by the fact that it came to you. You didn't go looking for it. It just sort of arrived.
It did arrive. And a good story just doesn't leave you alone. It follows you around. That's the only way I can explain it. And I think all those little moments when you're not thinking about something else or you see something and it makes you think of that, then it all starts to seep in. But I think when I came to do the final artwork, I had to work on a few pieces at once because it felt so much pressure to get each piece perfect. So I would always have a few on the go. But I work in ink and there's lots of pastel and colour pencil. It's a very sort of glowing palette. The grief is shown through this sort of orangey yellow colour throughout. Starts off quite grey and then we build with colour as we go through. She travels through different worlds in her grief. And she finds in one of the worlds her chick and they get to spend the day together. So she sort of starts off, she's the only egg that doesn't hatch. All the other eggs hatch, hers doesn't. And she goes on this journey through different worlds. She finds her chick. They spend the day together and then they have to say goodbye. The chick can stay in that world. She can't leave and Pen can't stay. So it's this moment where they have to say goodbye. And I cried every time I look at that spread for a long time. But for me, that's something I hadn't found in books. I hadn't got that. And I think if you've ever had a hard goodbye in a hospital, you'll feel those emotions when you read that. And then she flies back down to her world. And we talk about the fact that she has this love now, you know, forever and beyond, and she'll always have it. And her wings have grown throughout the story. So she now can fly. And she's changed, which I think grief completely transforms you. And so I love that literal representation of that she's so different to the others. And I think it's those spreads that have really resonated with people. But also you can read it with a child and they read it as a story about a penguin and it's gentler. So I feel like it runs on two narratives slightly. But yeah, I'm really proud of it.
I was going to ask you where the title came from, but you've kind of described in her journey, she went beyond.
Yeah. I felt like the whole experience was beyond. The love's beyond anything I've known. The grief's beyond anything I've experienced. It feels as though I felt like the moment it happened and we lost her, we seemed to sort of go into a different reality. Anyway, I can explain it. It's like we crossed a threshold, me and my husband, that we've never come back from. And it was almost as though the whole experience was beyond anything we could have imagined. When we became pregnant, we never could have pictured this would be something we would go through. But I think, yeah, beyond for me just always felt that you go through this journey, this grief journey, all of it. It all just feels so much bigger than me or what I've ever experienced before. So I think that's where it came from. I don't know. It visited me like the book, I suppose, the title.
Interesting what you say about love as well, because until you have a baby, a child, you don't really understand all that love can be, do you?
Yes, and I think that's something that if you know somebody who's lost a baby, it's a very difficult thing because society tells us that we firstly shouldn't talk about it. People don't want to hear about it. They secondly treat it as though the baby's this anonymous thing that's sort of nameless, really. And the third thing is you're supposed to just move on and never mention them. And ideally, I hope it's right to say this, but I think society expects us to kind of just have another baby and wipe it away. And bereaved mothers I know have had this experience too. And it's very hard to explain to people who haven't been through it that just because you didn't hold the baby, it doesn't mean they weren't real. And that child is different to the children you have after that. And my girls all looked really similar when they were born, but Ren was much taller. You know, she was physically very different. She was our firstborn. She made us parents. That will never change. And I sometimes think if we could, as a society, understand that a bit more, and that mothers need to talk about their babies, even if it's just to say their name or hear their name, it's really unnatural for us to never speak of our children. And so that's something I'd love to see in the future, is that we're able to have those conversations a bit more. And I think some of the most beautiful conversations I had after we lost Ren were people just asking a bit about what did she look like, or, you know, just really simple things. Or why did you pick her name? You know, that kind of thing. I think it's very difficult when you are a mother now, but you don't really know what that means because you're a bereaved mother. It's a complicated thing, but I think the way I've dealt with it and the reason I can talk about Ren and this experience is because I do things for her. So obviously not just the book, but we always go out on her birthday every year. You know, we make things for her every Christmas Eve. We wake up in the morning and we see the sunrise at the beach for her. And I'll have a little cry, and it's like we have to include her, and then we can have our normal Christmas day. But to me, it feels so natural to have her take up some space in our lives. And I think it makes me a much happier mum and a better mum to my children here, that I have space to grieve her still, space to talk about her. And I think if there's anyone who's not feeling like they're getting that space with their grief, whatever grief that is, it's really important to try and do things, I think, do something, you know, that makes you feel a connection, and give yourself some space on those dates that are hard, you know, tough.
And it sounds like your two daughters clearly think of her as their sister.
Yeah, I think as they're getting older, they'll understand more and more. But I think we chose to give them both the middle name Wren. And I don't know what anyone else will think about that, but for me and my husband, we had really clear feeling it was the right thing to do, because to us, Wren isn't this sad thing that happens. Wren is a magical, beautiful daughter and sister that should be here. And so we feel there's something really special about her name, and it's almost a name that unites our family first, because we were a family first with her. And so they know they're Juno Wren and Ottilie Wren, and they talk about the name. I hope as they grow older, they'll understand why we did that, and they'll understand, I don't know, lots of things about all of it. But I think we will judge it with what they can understand as they grow older, certainly. Yeah.
But it's a lovely way of carrying her name forward, isn't it?
Yes, that's it. Yeah. And I think if you lose anyone, you just like to hear their name, you know, it's such a powerful thing if somebody says their name.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier on that friends sometimes can be helpful, sometimes can't. Were there any things that stand out for you amongst things people said?
I think lots of people said amazing things, and I think some people don't say anything, and that can be difficult. I think actually I went back to work. So I was working, I had like a little part-time job where we used to live. And I remember going along after I'd lost Wren, and three of the girls were talking about their births, which comes up a lot with women anyway. We all like to talk about births and newborn days. And so I think I was probably a bit quiet in the corner. You know, they'd all known what had happened. They worked with me through my pregnancy. And she just opened up the conversation to me. And she quite bravely, I think, asked me a question about my birth. And it was like she just looked at me and said, I know you're a mum too. And it was brave of her. And it meant the world to me at that point, because I'd had people writing cards, you know, congratulations, your parents, even though, because you are, it's a really difficult thing. But I just thought there was something really beautiful about the way she included me in that conversation. And I won't forget it. And I think maybe that's something that's one of the last taboos, maybe, is this conversation in a way. And I think the friends that you hold really dear, for me, are the ones that have seen picture of Wren, or I have a friend that wanted to see her casts. And there's something about when you see the size of her hands and feet, you know, you really are like, wow, you know, she was really here. And friends can hold a big part. I do think, though, I joined the Sounds Online community, and that also really helped me, because it's a forum of other bereaved mothers. And things like planning her funeral, things like that. When I had questions, I could go on there 24/7. You can log on and ask or read someone else's experience, and you don't feel as alone. That got me through some tough times, definitely. And then I would go on there later And I'd help other mothers who were going through that same stage and say what we did and try and help, because that's how the community works. So yeah, I'd really recommend anyone who's been through baby loss, who's struggling, to go on the Sounds Online community. It's all private. Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
So what kind of funeral did you settle on?
So we just had some family. It was very small. And it was kind of so difficult to know what to do. But I remember we had a really lovely funeral director down the road. We wanted to have her cremated because we wanted to bring her home. We hadn't lived in the area that long. Didn't feel there was a natural place nearby that we'd want to bury her in case we moved, or it just wasn't that one place yet. And so for us, the thought we could bring her home where she should be was the thing we wanted to do. And my husband's always said on her 18th birthday, he'd like to scatter her ashes, because that's when it would have been, she probably would have left, wouldn't she, to go to university or whatever. So that's what we'll do. The actual funeral itself, it was in a very sweet little crematorium. We had a little sort of service. We were looking out on lots of trees and plants, and there was lots of bird song. And then afterwards, we went to the beach, the family, and we walked the beach together. It was tough to get through. I think when you're taken to the funeral directors and you're looking at the little booklet of children's coffins and things, it's almost, you think, how can I be here? You know, how does this document even exist? It's very difficult to deal with. But we picked her a wicker basket, which looked like a wicker basket coffin, and we had lots of yellow roses for her, and we did some readings. It was lovely. I hope we did her proud. But it was tough. It's 7 years this year since we lost her, so it feels like it's a little while ago now.
Do you imagine her as a 7-year-old?
Yes, and it's funny sometimes if we're at the park and my eldest daughter, she's 5, she likes older girls, and if there's any older girls around, she'll always go and try and play with them. So I've very often seen her with a 7-year-old, or, you know, a big sister age, and it always goes straight into my mind of, you know, this is what it would have been like. I think time, you know, when she would have started school was difficult, that milestone. But yeah, I do sometimes think about that.
I know one of the things you say is that you believe in making space for grief.
Yes, definitely.
How do you do that nowadays?
I just think bottling it up is the worst thing you can do to yourself. And I think it's quite easy to do that. But I think the first thing to do is to make sure you have whatever day it was, the anniversary of whatever it is that's most painful for you, you have that day to yourself, and you choose something that's going to bring you comfort or give you just some space from life to be able to cry and let it out. Or even revisit their things. You know, I think it's important. I think the way I've been doing it, obviously with the book, was amazing because I had this regular outlet and it was very therapeutic and very healing in lots of ways. But I think it's almost a daily practice in some ways of either letting myself think about things that have happened or planning something to do for her or something in the future. But I had counselling for such a long time that I feel it's given me the tools to be able to deal with it and know when it's building up and know when I need to take a break and give myself some space. I think for me, it's things like I'll get nervous about the kids going too high at the park or playing on things. I'll get fearful. And sometimes I know that's connected to my grief, and that might mean I need a bit of time to process again, I suppose. But yeah, it comes in waves, doesn't it, grief?
Well, exactly. And you can't plan when it's going to hit you, can you? But I've always said that I kind of welcome it in because that's my evidence, really, that I loved my husband. You know, the fact that I care so much about being without him. It's okay to be sad.
It is. And they say grief is love with nowhere to go. And I think that does sum up a lot, actually. And I think it's, I mean, for you, it's such a different thing because you have all those memories and places. And, you know, I think it's about tapping into those. I do think sometimes you need to tap into the raw emotion of it to let it out, but also just including them in your life as much as you can. So you feel they're near, which feels important to me. But the love just doesn't dissipate. It doesn't change, I don't think. I think it stays that way. And the grief is there and you grow around it, you know, and you find a way to grow around it and keep going. It doesn't stay in the past.
It comes with you.
It does come with you. Maybe that's what's hard for people to understand who've not had it happen. But yeah, it all comes back to love, certainly.
It does. And before we go, Katie, I'd just love you to give details of your website so that people can find you. And let's mention the book title again. It's Beyond.
My website's katieclemmonson.com and I'm on Instagram at katieclemmonson.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that with me. I was going to say it can't have been easy, but on the other hand, I know that we do get an awful lot from talking about these things, don't we?
We do, and I think it's incredibly important that we talk about it. And I love speaking to other people who've been through this. I think grief just changes you, makes you more empathetic. I think you see life differently. I think it changes so many things. And so there's an understanding, I think, between those who are grieving. But I love talking about Ren. I'm always happy to talk about Ren. And it's been really lovely to be invited on. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. And if there's ever another opportunity to talk about Ren, let's do it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much, Katie. Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.